Dan Titus fills in for Dan Devine, and he helps us recap all the NBA action for Christmas Day. That and more coming up right now on this episode of No Cap Room. Hello, friends. Welcome to a very special post-Christmas episode of No Cap Room here on the Ball Don't Lie podcast network from Yahoo Sports. My name is Jake Fisher. I am a senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. I hope you all had a wonderful weekend. If you're watching on YouTube, I'm still clinging on to the Christmas spirit. Got a little elf hat. Or what do you call this hat? Dan Titus, our guest. Joining me today, fantasy analyst from Yahoo Sports, not Dan Devine, a Dan by a different name. Dan Titus, what's up, man? How are you?
What's good, man? I definitely say that I qualify that as an elf-ish hat. But elf-ish, it's got a little Santa to it too. I don't know, like it's definitely got the nice little Santa like droopage there. I feel like you got the nice hang time on it. So yeah man, you're rocking it well.
Thank you. I've always taken ugly Christmas sweaters and Christmas fashion seriously. Last night we drove out to Diker Heights. I don't know if you're familiar. It's like South Brooklyn, like very, very south. They have this whole stretch. I think I said stretch. They had this whole stretch of Christmas lights, and there's one house that does it super big. They had like a bazillion nutcrackers. It was a fever dream of Christmas lights, but it was nice. A lot of traffic. Definitely, we were not the only ones who had that idea, but we did it. We made it. We made it through. How was your Christmas, man?
It was chill, man. Honestly, it's crazy because I feel like I don't remember the last time we had three football games and five basketball games. So literally, as soon as I woke up, my kid's ripping open all of his presents, and I'm like, oh, I can turn on the Bucks and Knicks.
There you go.
So I think that was cool, man. And outside of that, it was definitely cool. It was nice to take the kiddo around, see all the Christmas lights and all that. I gotta say though, the older I get, if I didn't have a kid, man, I would not be in the Christmas spirit, dude. Like, I would just be so over all of the like craziness when you go to like Target or just to do simple things. It's just like, yo, why are y'all out? Like, just go home. I don't know. That's a curmudgeon in me. But now that I got a kid, I gotta put on my Christmas spirit.
I feel that. We almost drowned in the sea of people in Rockefeller Center trying. We had like an hour to kill.
Right.
We did. This was great. My lovely lady had the idea of choosing to check off the box of the seven fishes by doing omakase sushi on the Upper East Side on Sunday night, Christmas Eve. And in order to like kill time, we stopped off at Saks Fifth Avenue to see the lights and the windows. And man, a lot of people there who are definitely not from America who thought, what a great time to go visit New York City Christmas, which happens every year. I always remember that until I remember, and the memory, it smacks in the face. But we're gonna go through the Christmas slate of games today. We're gonna see what lessons we learned, what highlights ensued. But first, since Dan is here to bless us with his fantasy knowledges, let's get a quick word from Dan Titus about all the holiday joy that fantasy sports at Yahoo can bring into your home.
That's right. And if you haven't already, you're probably been eliminated from your fantasy football playoffs. I know I have. Me and Jake, we go back and forth texting about what we're going to do. If you didn't make it to the championship, or even if you did, join a public league with Yahoo Fantasy Basketball, and you can win up to $100 and an e-gift card to spend at NBA.com. So that's pretty cool. You can get yourself a jersey, get yourself some nice little swag, maybe some shorts for the summertime when it's nice out there. I don't recommend the City Edition colorways, man. Those jerseys are a little bit loud, but go to Yahoo Fantasy, download the Yahoo Fantasy app, and start a public league today, man. Join a public league. It's going to be fun.
There you go. Free $100. All you got to do is press
a button.
Have some fun.
Exactly.
I am in the championship game in my league with the high school friends that loyal listeners of the NC Armada, or I guess the NC Armada who are loyal listeners, will recall. And I needed to hit you up from Manila, one of my last nights in Manila, to get help from our, you know, fantasy gods. That's what they call it, the god mode, the people who can go in and pull all the levers to help me set the order, because I in the decade I've been the commissioner on Yahoo Sports for this fantasy league, I have never set the order correctly. It's always my issue. So now, thankfully, I'm on this side of the curtain. I can talk to the Wizard of Oz, and they can pull some strings. But I'm in the championship game thanks to, and this well is the done. Difficult part of fantasy, man. Thanks to Brock Purdy's injury, I inched in on like by like 1.3 points into the championship. So
hey, we've got a nice a win's matchup. A win.
Need Jamar Chase to come back healthy. And need James Cook, who went off of my bench the last 2 weeks, and then put up a 5-point deuce on semifinal Sunday or Monday, whatever day they played. Not a good one. But we survived. We survived in advance.
Yeah, I got by James Cook too, man. And unfortunately, I had him on the bench for those two games. He went off, and then I put him in there, and he gives me 5 points. I'm like, cool, bro. I got a couple leagues I'm still vying for a championship, so not as profitable as I thought it would be, but it's still going to be a good year nonetheless.
Well, we'll get into some fantasy basketball tips later, but right now let's dive into the Christmas Day games. The Knicks, noon Eastern. I was there rubbing sleep out of my eyes. Early game, early tip off. I wrote this years ago for Sports Illustrated. I don't have the numbers in front of me because I don't want to encourage our listeners to go to another website, but the efficiency numbers are across the board.
Especially not one that does bots.
Yeah, we're gonna not go any deeper there. The efficiency numbers are like always down across the board, and I get it because I don't want to be at a game at noon, but I was there. The MSG crowd loving Feliz Navidad on the Jumbotron. Skyler, I think his name's Austin, the guy from Pitch Perfect who Anna Kendrick falls in love with in the first movie. He sang the national anthem.
Okay.
Not to be a hater, I was disappointed. Maybe because there wasn't like a whole doo-wop group in the background. But Jalen Brunson did not disappoint. 38 points, the third most in Knicks franchise history on Christmas Day, which I learned they are the team that has played the most games on Christmas Day of any team. So that's a good record for Jalen Brunson to hold. And I don't think he's motivated by the Becky Hammon too small to be a top tier, you know, 1A player. But man, it does seem like anytime he gets the Bucks, which I think the streak was 7 straight games that Milwaukee had knocked off New York. They definitely, it was dating back to last season. This was the first time in 4 tries New York was able to beat Giannis Antetokounmpo and company. So I don't know. Maybe it's just anecdotal, but it does seem like Brunson tries to take his game up another notch on those national TV, you know, the playoff games against Utah and Luka was that like when it's a moment that dude always does seem to show up and arrive. So I'm curious, Dan, are you seeing like the all-star campaign that I'm seeing from the 6'1", 190 pound, probably not too small to be a top option on a legitimate, you know, plucky playoff team that I am? Or is there something different that you're kind of looking at this, a different lens that you're seeing this through?
I mean, honestly, I feel like he's stepped up in all of the biggest moments when he's been given the opportunity to, right? Like this started in the playoffs 2 years ago with Dallas, with Luka down. This man just willed the Dallas Mavericks through that, you know, playoff run enough to get him that bag to be the front man for New York. And I don't think he's disappointed. And I think, you know, whether he's listening to Becky Hammon's comments or not, one thing is true. This dude is an all-star. I think you can make the case that he could be an all-star starter right now. He's averaging a career high in points per game. He's averaging almost 6 dimes, but he's just doing it efficiently too. And like, okay, like Allen Iverson always got, you know, I'm an Iverson guy, you know, you were too. He always got a lot of additional boost because he's so small and doing what he does. But the way that he attacks the mid-range and gets to his spots with ease, and this dude makes like very difficult shots. Like his shot creation is absolutely outstanding. And I think he's just putting this whole city on his back. And I'm not saying that the Knicks are going to win a championship, because that part I actually do agree with Becky Hammon. I think they're going to need to make a move. And they were fortunate that they got their supporting cast to show out in this game. They had 4 players in over 20 points. You know, RJ Barrett and Brunson went to work early. They scored 29 points in the first quarter, which has outscored the freaking Bucks. So I think that, you know, if I'm looking big picture on this, I think that the Knicks at least pose an interesting matchup against the Bucks if they should see them again, like maybe down the line in the playoffs. One of the areas that they absolutely dominated this game was in the paint. They scored 72 points in the paint. And the Bucks usually are pretty good against the paint. Like this year, they're, you know, bottom 10, averaging 53, letting up 53 per game. But last year, they led the league. So I think that that actually might be an area of concern for the Bucks long term if they don't figure that out. But I think this is just a masterclass of Jalen Brunson going off and leading his squad the way that he has just been doing for much of the last 2 years that he's been there. But I do have concerns whether RJ Barrett's going to come out and give you 21 points. And, you know, I think Julius Randle has proven he can be a solid number two. And then Emmanuel Quickly off the bench, man. I think he's one of the best in the game when he's actually feeling it. So I don't know. This Knicks team always has the feeling of a dangerous team that can upset you in a couple of games. But then after that, it's like championship. I don't know about that.
Yeah, no, the points in the paint is a good point. Tibbs talked about a post game that there was like more of an effort and an energy and transition. And that's especially how you have to attack a team that has 2 7-footers who are stalking that back line of the defense when everything's set in the half court. Yeah. Another thing I just want to say on Brunson, and I posted out my tweet about the story. It was some nice full circle moment where Adrian Griffin, the Bucks head coach, was not just an assistant with Rick Brunson when they were both in Chicago, and Rick was training Jalen at the Bulls practice facility, much like that video that surfaced online this week of them at the park and Rick definitely coaching him hard, and you know, them kind of all coming together on Christmas and all that type of stuff. I think I posted Jalen Brunson gave a nice gift to remind all the haters. And there was a lot of hate on that tweet saying he has no haters. So I'm sorry. I saw Spike Eskin, friend of the show, writes Ricky Sanchez, say he has no haters. Saw plenty of other people say he has no haters. Should I said like doubters instead? I don't know, but he's not, he doubters. Wasn't 12th in the ESPN straw poll. He didn't make the top 12 for that ESPN straw poll of MVP voting, which like Rudy Gobert had a vote over him. Like, I'm not saying that he should be on the top five ballot for MVP when you have Joel Embiid and Jokic and Luka and Anthony Edwards and anyone bought, like, you just go down the list. But, I mean, the guy is definitely, to me, you said he's an all-star starter candidate. Like, I would absolutely agree with that. And I think that's a real testament to, like, I don't know. I think if you said that, I think a lot of people... I mean, you did say that. I think
like
a lot of people listening,
right?
Yeah, I think a lot of people listening might be like, whoa, Dan Titus comes on here thinking he's Dan Devine and he's just throwing out flames here. But I think that's it's a reasonable assessment. And, you know, it helps going up against a Bucks defense that really cannot control top tier, you know, guard play. I mean, the point of attack defense has definitely become like one of the bigger buzzwords in the league. Just kind of like a copycat league type of, you know, just like movement shooting is like now this new elusive skill set that all these teams are trying to really like, are you a shooter or can you be a movement shooter? The Bucks, I mean, it was the biggest thought with the Drew Holiday deal where you swap him and bring in Dame. I called it the Drew Holiday deal because that's to me like what this was about. It wasn't about getting Damian Lillard. It was about thinking how much better Damian Lillard could be for Drew Holiday. In the overall grand scheme of what Milwaukee can do with Giannis Antetokounmpo at the front and center of all this. And yeah, it's just, it's hard to think about. You talked about, can the Knicks give the Bucks a tough run in the postseason? It's just hard to look at Milwaukee as much as people there are saying, you know, things are gelling now. We're starting to figure things out on both sides of the floor. Adrian Griffin pregame was talking about how they're finding out how to understand each other on defense and know where things got to pick up. And Chris Middleton looks healthy again. There's just like, it's too easy to carve them up to your point about getting in the paint. Like what is that? You know, Brook Lopez was a defensive player of the year candidate last year, arguably should have won it. He'll be considered there again. It's just, it is concerning how easy it is for someone like Jalen Brunson. Then you look at Boston, like they're going to have plenty of guys who can get downhill. Tyrese Maxey put up a stinker last night. We'll get to that. But like, it's just, that is a cause for concern for Milwaukee, I would say. And, you know, Jay Crowder has been out. I was talking to him pregame and he thinks he's on the mend and targeting something in like mid-January. I don't want to put on too specific because we were just kind of shooting the shit about it, but positive energy from Jay Crowder. But Jay Crowder is not going to be, you know, locking down on ball on an island like he used to. So
no.
I don't know. That's my ramble on Milwaukee.
I'm with you, man. I think that they have some concerns about their depth. You know, they obviously have the elite stars there. They went star hunting, got Damian Lillard. But I think you're right in the fact that I don't think it was talked about enough how much Jrue Holiday impacted them defensively and how much they're struggling to combat that now when they get a physical team that you need to play more at the level. And as you said, yeah, I think that that's, I mean, they'll figure it out, right, eventually. And I think getting someone like a Jay Crowder will certainly help them, their wing defense. But, you know, I don't think people are really scared when you bring in a second unit of Austin Jackson Jr. and Marjon Beauchamp. Like, you're not scared to attack that. Pat Connaughton, like, I don't know, man. They definitely have some depth issues. So I wouldn't be surprised if they tried to do something, you know, probably by the trade deadline might help them to get some additional defensive support there. But it's a regular season game.
Don't have a ton of things to play with, though.
No, they don't. They really don't. not after going after Damian Lillard. Yeah.
Andre Jackson does some fun stuff out there. And like, that's my segue into Denver, being that both the Nuggets and Milwaukee, to your point about reinforcements, like they both came into this year hoping that, you know, for Milwaukee, it was Beauchamp and it was Andre Jackson, that they could do something, that they could come and use this 82 games to figure out ways to help supplant that, you know, lacking whatever was going out the door with Jrue Holiday on the perimeter defense. But with Denver, we've talked about it on the show. I mean, the Nuggets really do believe that some combination of Peyton Watson, Christian Brown, who did it in the finals last year, go down the list of all their young dudes. I mean, even Zeke Nagy, who's kind of been stashed away for them for a while and signed a decent extension number. Like, Denver is confident in their personnel scouting ability that all those guys can kind of grow and get reps, especially Peyton Watson. They're super, super high on there. And come playoff time, all the depth that they will need, all the replacements for, you know, Bruce Brown heading out the door to Indiana will be there. But I was watching this game a little bit this morning, and my biggest thought was the Nuggets top five is just a perfect lineup. It really is, especially when Michael Porter Jr. has gotten leaps and bounds better on the defensive side of the ball and as a playmaker. That little like fun behind the back pass that I think he threw to Reggie Jackson on the wing was like silly and a little bit, you know, oh, maybe that's kind of the MPJ, like a little bit of lack of judgment, whatever sauce stuff. Yeah, but it's also like deference, and he's throwing the extra pass more than he ever has before. He had two ridiculous blocks that were like full effort plays. Someone I've always kind of liked. I spent some time with him in Vegas in his hotel room at Summer League a couple years ago. Like, we were supposed to meet in the lobby. And usually these guys are like, you know, either through team PR or the agent, they're like trying to get you as in like as sterile and like non-threatening or like let's not give this guy an opportunity to like show you he's got clothes everywhere in his place environment. And like, he was just so authentic and him and just like a nice guy. Had to battle Mike Malone, saying he had to earn his stripes to get off the bench for years because of all the judgment, efficiency, whatever stuff. And like, he's just quietly become a fucking stud. Like, that dude could have been faced off of his intel coming out of college. Like, could have been the most obvious regression to the mean post-championship hangover type of, oh, the 82 games don't matter. We just got to, especially after the Nuggets like moonwalked their way through the last 15 games of last year. They were so far in advance of everyone in the standings. The fact he's come out and had the year he's had, Aaron Gordon is just doing Aaron Gordon things. Like, man, Denver just, to me, it was a reminder, especially with, you know, every time you watch Golden State, it's like a, you know, we're plotting it on an XY chart of like what level of panic versus what level of, whoo, this is intriguing. Like, they're kind of vacillating between. Denver's just Denver, man. And the West is, it was just a nice reminder, while Minnesota was at home and Oklahoma City was at home and people could complain about that, Denver just, I think, reminded me, and I think a lot of people too, that the Western Conference is still going to run through Mile High.
Yeah, I didn't really think there was any really contest to this, because, you know, the Nuggets are just so complete, as you said, man. To get double doubles out of Aaron Gordon and Michael Porter Jr., but Michael Porter Jr. with four blocks, having him committed on the defensive end, like you suggested, man, that's just a game changer for them. And I couldn't help but notice, you know, obviously there was the other end of that, you know, the spectrum there where Steve Kerr was very pissed off about the foul mm-hmm. distribution, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a little bit. But Nikola Jokic didn't really have that great of a game, right? He only made 4 field goals, crushed it at the line, but yeah. he only had 4 field goals. And to be able to get that much supporting cast, Jamal Murray was a dog. Like he got, I mean, 28 points, 5 boards, 3 assists, but he got every shot that he wanted and plenty of highlight reel plays. He had that baseline, like kind of hezzy, and then came around on the reverse, on the mm-hmm. The one-handed reverse. And then, I mean, just the turnaround fadeaways that he was having, like he just looks so comfortable now. And having that guy being able to be a, you know, a focal point of the offense when he needs to, when their main guy is struggling. But then also you have these other guys that can deliver. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope was in mm-hmm. double figures. So, I don't know, they're just so deep, man. Like, I just don't know what you can do. So even if... like I love what their youth movement, what they have coming up, and Peyton Watson and Julian Strother. I mean, they got ballers. So like I just don't see where up and down the roster, man. Like there's just no flaw. And you know, on the Warriors side of things, I feel like they're still trying to figure it out. Like the Warriors actually played all right. They played pretty well. It was just the free throw disparity, you know. And I think Steve Kerr, for those that didn't hear, he said, the league has legislated defense out of the game in this league. It's a parade to the free throw line and it's disgusting to watch. Those are some pretty scathing words, man.
Yeah.
But I think it more so
get
just
off my lawn, Steve Kerr.
Yeah. But I really feel like it just speaks to the fact that, you know, it's not like the Warriors are like crying here. Like they've, you know, they're 8th in free throw attempts this season. So like they're getting to the line too.
Man, you're bringing the homework. Doesn't matter what Dan's in the chair, he is bringing the homework. I love it.
Yeah, but at this point, it's like, I think they just want consistency with these calls, right? And it's Christmas Day. You want to see a high-scoring game, not the tempo and the flow get kind of yeah. messed up like Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, and Brandon Pajemski were all saying after the game. So, you know, I would actually feel pretty good about the way the Warriors play, considering that Steph only had 18 points, shot horribly, 7-for-21 from the field, and Klay Thompson was just a no-show. But yeah, I don't know how much you guys have talked about Brandon Pajemski, but I'm pretty impressed,
really have
man. And he's a guy that I think is really going to emerge up this rookie ladder. Like right now, he's not really on that list. We'll talk about another rookie later in Jaime Jaquez. But what he brings to the Warriors, as well as I saw you retweeted, there is a repost, something about how the youth movement of the Warriors is kind of forcing Steve Kerr's hand to be very uncomfortable. Yeah. Like between Pajemski and Kuminga's emergence, Dario Saric, and then you got Trayce Jackson Davis, like they're going to have to start playing these guys to compete. Because I think you can see now that Klay Thompson yeah. and Wiggins aren't just going to be consistent throughout the rest of the season. Who knows what you're going to get from Draymond Green. So I think the big picture here for the Warriors is they got to let their young boys cook. Pajemski had 5 steals, career high. He just plays. He can play at the level. He can guard multiple positions. He's an excellent rebounder. They got to let him continue to start.
Yeah. I know a lot of people with Golden State pretty well, like a lot of people over there. I've never heard Warriors decision makers talk so like openly about how there's things we got to figure out still. Like mm-hmm. for years, it's always been kind of this, we got Steph and we have this championship culture. We're going to figure it out. We're just going to add in, you know, the next guy who can be David West, you know, just call up, you know, bring on Nemanja Bjelica and plug in Gary Payton II and a Sean Livingston spot. And we're going to run the pinch post. Yeah. And it just doesn't matter. We've got Steph and Clay and Draymond. Andrew Wiggins can just kind of dust himself off and become the second best player on a finals team. I'm like, well, it'll be great. This is kind of the first time that the fact that they're so willing and excited to throw in Pods and Trace and just kind of figure this out on the fly, like, it's definitely, I think, telling of how experimental this franchise is willing to get right now, to your point, how they have not been under Steve Kerr for many a year. I mean, we kind of saw it. It was pretty much like the one most valid criticism you could have given to Kerr and the USA basketball staff this summer back in Manila.
Good point.
He definitely sees the game through a prism that he likes. And there isn't a ton of wiggle room off of that. And it's been interesting to see how pods can kind of change that dynamic, because there are things that he does that have been done before in that, like, he definitely is Gary Payton-ish in how he attacks the offensive glass at that size and can be a willing screener and can be a playmaker out of the short roll, kind of Bruce Brownish, like he was doing in Denver. Right. When there's also like shot creation ability and shooting off the dribble that those guys don't have. So it's a pretty enticing combination. Kuminga, you know, his growth and progression is big for two reasons, not just because of what he could do for on the floor for this team, and they've always needed that to happen. Like, at a bare minimum, Golden State needed him to become the Andre Iguodala replacement, and the hope was that he would be that plus more on the offensive side of the ball. If he does continue to take these steps forward, then we're not considering the other side of the coin of what his development can do for his trade value. But that is the reality, where if they do want to get better, he is the biggest piece that they can use to go out the door and improve this thing. But I don't know. I think they had won 5 straight going into this, and I think right now it's still like eternal evaluation mode while Draymond is on the sidelines and doing what he has to do to get back on the floor. I think Golden State's still kind of in like a assessment situation and not like really looking outward at what they can accomplish right now. But obviously, like all teams in this trade season, they're having you know, exploratory conversations, and we'll see what comes of it all. In the middle game of the day, I guess, Celtics Lakers, which the Lakers whites, the Celtics green. It just makes me think of 08 and 2010, and it brings me back nostalgia. And it also made me think how it would be really cool to have LeBron's Lakers in the finals against the Celtics. But the Lakers are just like way, way, way off of that level compared to what Boston did. Let's put a pin in the LA, because I want to ask you, just thinking about it as I was watching the tape this morning and then looking at some numbers, is Derek White like a fantasy god? Is he like a top 15, top 10 fantasy player? The dude does literally everything. He blocks shots. He hits threes. He steals. The guy does it all. He's a rebounder. Truly, where does he rank? I don't know. I don't play fantasy basketball. Not to dismiss our ads and telling everyone to sign up. I just don't really want to be rooting for players individually. It's kind of like a how to do my job thing. However, is Derek White a fantasy god?
He is a fantasy god. Right now, he's top 20 in terms of per game production. And one of the things that Derek White, I think, is the emergence of Derek White in terms of just production. Before, when he was in San Antonio, he was like, you know, kind of a high 30s, 3-point shooter. Didn't really have an opportunity. Got a little bit of playmaking in there whenever DeJounte Murray was hurt. But when he went to Boston and he got himself into a situation where he could be the third or fourth best player, he could be a catch and shoot guy. And now that he has confidence, we already knew what he could do defensively. But now, man, it's just all coming together. And I think one of the best things that the Celtics did was trade Marcus Smart, because that allowed Derek White to kind of be in more of a hybrid facilitation mode. Because, yeah, Drew Holiday is there. But I think it actually just opened up their offense a bit more. Same with Kristaps Porzingis, to a point where these starters are just maximizing efficiency right now. I mean, the dude's shooting 50% from the field, 90% from the line. He might be a 50-40-90 guy. Like, he's on the verge of that. But the defensive numbers, man, he's averaging over a block a game, steal a game. It's only him and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander primarily that have that two-way blocking upside from a guard spot. So the dude's an absolute monster for fantasy. So if you have him, congratulations. He's going to continue to be a beast.
Yeah. We'll talk plenty more about Boston, I'm sure, in the coming weeks of the show, because they don't have a ton to really tweak. Like, they're playing Nemus Keita, if I pronounce something correctly, I apologize, a ton on this road trip. I think this is like their evaluation of, is he better than Luke Kornet? And if he's not that much better, then do we need to go out and get like another real big before the deadline thing? The Lakers have a lot more questions. They've lost 5 of 6 since the in-season tournament. And Gabe Vincent will now miss 6 to 8 weeks after knee surgery. There's definite optimism there, I can say, after some morning calls, that it's closer to the 6-week timetable than 8, which will be helpful, especially if he can come back at all before February 8th, which I don't think that's the case, being that we're recording this on December 26th. It's like very tight window. But for now, like, that's a critical chip, the mid-level, basically the full mid-level, that the Lakers have gotten nothing back for, with a team that was already kind of asset strapped with so many picks having gone out the door for the Russell Westbrook trade, and then another pick out the door to get off of him and bring back D'Lo and all that type of stuff. D'Lo went to the bench. He's been so hot and cold, and D'Lo basically this season, where, you know, I am a little bit, I'm going to say this, I'm going to editorialize more than I usually do. I'm a little bit worried that all of this is leading towards a Lakers-Zach LaVine trade coming, because D'Lo is the natural salary that would make that work, plus some other stuff. And I don't know if LaVine will be what this team needs. It seems like, to me, there is definitely a need for shooting, which he would fill for sure. But the defense is just, to me, when AD's not going Godzilla mode in the in-season tournament, it's, you know, Jared Vanderbilt's a total negative on offense right now. That the lineup stuff with trying to figure out how to use Austin Reeves when he is their third best player, it's kind of like, there's been some complaints I've seen about the Knicks not using Emmanuel quickly enough. Like, he's still around 24 minutes a game. Like, people are saying, why isn't he in the 30s? Austin Reeves is kind of similar in that boat, and he did get paid. Like, the quickly stuff is, you can point it to any conspiracy if you want and be like, oh, contract extension stuff, he's coming up, or they're trying, whatever. I'm not saying that's real, but I could see someone, an angry fan at home, trying to rack their brain for an answer. Like, Austin got paid. He's there. I can understand why there'd be some head scratching from Lakers fans about what's going on there, and some kind of questions about how big they're going to go to try to plug this hole, because we've seen how big they've gone with, you know, the biggest of ways with Westbrook. It's just, I'm curious, Dan, and I don't know, from your seat, from your spot at home, what do you think this team should be trying to do to get, I mean, they're clearly not on the level right now of what Denver did and what we were just talking about in the previous segment.
And I don't know that a move with the assets that they have will get them to Denver's level. I think it makes sense, and I think we'll hear more about it. I was listening to the Steinline earlier today, and it doesn't sound like the Bulls are pressing, and I think it's more so because of the way that they're winning without LaVine on the floor is kind of hurting their trade position a little bit. The Bulls are 8-5 without LaVine, 5-13 with him. So at this point, it is a salary match thing, and I think D'Angelo Russell makes sense. And the way Kobe White's been playing, I think it makes LaVine expendable for sure. I just don't know how much does he raise the floor of the Lakers being put into that situation. Like, sure, offensively you get better, but Zach LaVine isn't a two-way guy. And to be fair,
anyone who's trading for him is going to buy in on he defended his ass off in the Olympics, and he'll be re-energized by a new situation. But there's just a long track record that says otherwise.
Yeah, and I would say that, you know, LeBron has a history of making these players that may have been in other situations, losing situations, kind of tap in and buy into what they're doing there. I just don't know that LaVine makes them better than the Denver Nuggets. Like, yeah, you get a few more wins here, but they got to do something. And moving D'Lo to the bench makes sense given the inconsistency. I think Torian Prince has been, you know, a really valuable piece for them. I think he's been playing very well. I just don't know.
Shout out Torian Prince.
Just behind AD, though, like, what do you get? You're really mortgaging your future on AD having to go nuclear.
It's a great point.
That's just not what he does consistently. Like, he'll do it every once in a while just to, like, make you remember, like, hey, I'm that guy. But then he'll fall back. He'll fade to black. Have another bad game. He gets abused by Jokic every time they play. So I don't know. They have a lot more questions than answers. And I don't know that Zach LaVine is going to be the one that's going to take him there.
The bigs is a great, great, great point, because obviously, you know, the Dwight Howard was it DeAndre who was the other big on that championship team? I think it was.
Yeah.
In 2020. It's so long ago, it's hard to remember. And Rob Pelinka just cast him aside very quickly. I think that's a very under the radar issue that's kind of boiling at the surface here. The Jackson Hayes, Christian Wood bench platoon really leaves a lot to be desired. It does. On both sides of the floor. So that's it's really tough when your offseason doesn't really bring anything from outside your building to improve your weaknesses when you obviously did have weaknesses. And part of that's been Vincent's inability to play. We'll see what happens there. I mean, again, there's some optimism about the surgery, and then he'll be all good and well after that. Sometimes that happens. You try to rehab it and do some things and whatever, and then you just got to go under the knife and fix it. But yeah, lot to be monitored and to figure out what will the Lakers look like come playoff time. And I mean, they're going to be right in the thick of these teams that are trying to get out of the play-in tournament. That's part of why the play-in, right. That's part of been the benefit. Everyone thought it would add some excitement, really just trying to get to the 10 seed. But to me, the most of the juice that comes with the play-in are for teams like the Lakers, teams trying to get out of that that 7 seed. The fight for 6th is really, really important. The Heat are right in that mix in the Eastern Conference, and they had a nice win over the Sixers yesterday. Obviously, no Joel Embiid, no Jimmy Butler. Tyrese Maxey struggled, 4 of 20 from the field, 1 of 8. Could just be a bad game against a scrappy defense. And it probably is. Like, that's all I'm really going to... I don't want to overvaluate that, flop, for lack of a better term, on Christmas Day, big stage, what have you. Unless you're seeing something, Dan, or is there any thought to your mind, like, of a bigger issue at play? Because to me, it just... I'm throwing that one out. He's been so phenomenal all year long.
Yeah, I'm throwing that one out. I think that was just a bad Tyrese Maxey game. Really wasn't forcing the issue initially, and then he kind of just didn't get into a rhythm the rest of the game. And surprisingly, of course this happens when Tobias Harris, he's been kind of inconsistent as usual, and he goes off for 27 points. Kelly Oubre had a good game. Mo Bamba had a sighting. I think that this was just kind of a throwaway game Bamba. For the Sixers. It was good to see him in the rotation, though. Paul Reed didn't really play particularly well, so it was nice to see Mo Bamba give them something different. But from the Sixers side of things, I think that this is really, they're 0-4 without Embiid on the floor. They need their MVP, and he's been largely available for much of the season. So I'm going to chalk this one up to a scrappy Miami defense that, depth certainly matters. And this is a team that I feel like they're in the same mold of Denver, just they're not as star ridden in the starting lineup, but like the depth of their team and the contributions that they're getting from these, seventh to ninth man guys, there's not many teams like them. And that's what makes them a good playoff team. So Caleb Martin did leave the game with an ankle injury. He's been playing pretty well, but outside of that, man, when Duncan Robinson finishes with a plus minus of 26, things went well. So
hey, shout out Duncan, man. look, there's all this talk in the fall about, man, poor Tyler Hero had his name dragged through the mud about if he was good enough to be traded for Donovan last summer, and then it was Damian this summer. Duncan Robinson's been in the trade, wins for even longer, and this guy got stapled to the bench last year and got dusted off for, in a pinch in game adjustments and just came out guns blazing. He was like the guy the Heat were going to in crunch time. They were running all their Duncan, movement shooting to go back to that sets against Boston. I remember in that game 6 with the Derek White tip in, like there was a ton. I mean, Duncan Robinson now being a guy who can attack closeouts and get to the rim. Shout out Duncan Robinson, man. Great podcast. Seems like a lovely guy. I watched his long interview with Mo Wagner before I wrote about Franz and Mo, and just like a delightful show, delightful guy. People love him down there. Shout out Duncan. He's killing it. Also,
dude, his true shooting percentage is like over 65% over the last 2 months. Stud. Dude's been averaging 15 points over the last 2 months. Like he stepped in when Tyler Hero was out and has played remarkably well. And I think a lot of people were hating on the contract that he got. He's been on the trade block, but this year he's showing out and he's showing up. So yeah, I agree with you, man. Shouts to Duncan.
Shout out Duncan. Shout out Jaime Jaquez, who put up incredible numbers in the last 17 games. This is Jaime Jaquez's numbers in the last 17 games since November 20th. 17.4 points, 3 assists, a three, shooting 52% from the field, 42% from three, 86% from the line.
Silly.
My parents went to, I forget who the Heat played, but their game on Friday night with two of their friends. And after, like the day after we recorded a show while I was in Orlando, telling Dan calling Jaime Jaquez my doppelganger, my mother proceeds to tell me that Jaime Jaquez is the player she thinks is the cutest on the Heat, and she now has a crush on him.
Oh, God, that's weird.
So we got to deal with some...
Oh, that's awkward. That's awkward.
Reverse Oedipus type stuff in holiday season in my household, but that's neither here nor there. Jaime Jaquez, runaway candidate for all-rookie team, and honestly... Yeah. This guy should be right there behind Chet and Victor in the rookie of the year race. Like you talked about the Heat's depth and, you know, they've got a bunch of 6th, 7th men like Caleb Martin doing his thing. Like that's kind of, I think, what the Heat were expecting and hoping he could contribute this year, be another one of those maybe undersized, versatile 4 men who we can put next to Bam and he can go do shit. And he's like, to me, clearly carved, this guy's got to be starting. He's playing, you know, he's basically playing 40 minutes a game whenever they need him to. So, mm-hmm. What a guy, what a player. Yeah. And now he has another woman crushing on him.
So I want to get your thoughts on, I think you said it best, actually, shoo-in for all rookie team right now. You have a third on the rookie ladder behind Wembanyama and Chet. Who would you put as 4 and 5 right now?
Man, you're putting me on the spot. Now I got to think of rookies. I mean, look, depending on how pods can continue to be, we'll see what happens there.
Sure. Yep.
Derek Lively, though, continues to just be the rim protector that, or not the rim protector, the lob threat that Luka rim runner, always needed.
Lob threat.
The Clint Capella to his James Harden. It's been, I mean, he also... I'm always impressed. It seems so simple and like rudimentary, but I'm always so impressed by big guys who can dunk without looking at the rim. Cause like, look, man, you're moving at a million miles an hour with all these people chopping at you and guards kind of coming under your landing pad and you can just kind of find the basket without looking at it. That is a skill. It is a real skill. He's awesome. And Luka always hyping him up to me is, let's take that into Mavs Suns. Did you watch that game? Did you stay up late?
Yeah, I'm a West Coaster, so that's like the game I actually get to watch every night. So, man, just the performance by Luka on Christmas and against the Phoenix Suns too, because there's always that competition between him and Devin Booker. We know the history there. But to go out and
seems friendly after the little mic'd up Devin asking how his daughter's doing. So that was nice. That warmed my cold heart on Christmas.
But Grant was ready to go though when they got that little scrap moment. But the fact that Luka can go out and get 50 points, 6 boards, 15 dimes, only the second person in NBA history with 50 points, at least 50 points and 15 assists, is just goes to show, man, how valuable he is. And I know he hasn't won a rookie an MVP yet, but the way that the Mavs are playing, and when he finally has a big man that's capable on offense, that can play defense, that can protect the rim, but then also give you something offensively, it just raises their ceiling. I think the comparison was great. This is the James Harden, Clint Capella that Luka never had before. And Porzingis, like, their relationship wasn't great. Porzingis' numbers were fine, but I think what his offensive skill set is lends itself better in like a situation like Boston, where it's like Luka doesn't need another person other than Kyrie there to kind of run things offensively. He just needs a guy to clean up the mess and take some pressure off when he's downhill. And that's exactly what Derek Lively's been doing. He had a double-double, and I think he's just going to continue to fall into that comfortability with Luka as in that two-man game. And couple things. So Luka, 6th time going for 50 points or more. seventh fastest in league history to 10,000 points. So the last, I guess the last person to get 10,000 points as early as Luka was Michael Jordan. So I'd say the kid's on a pretty nice little trajectory there.
Yeah.
But I just think that the Dallas Mavericks before, like I thought that, you know, Luka being so heliocentric was going to be a problem for them as they get deeper into the playoffs. But like, I'm starting to think now the way that he's getting these other unsung heroes involved, like Derek Jones Jr., there's a very good chance that this Mavericks team is different than they were in years past. So if they get Kyrie back, this squad's going to be really scary and a team that I don't really want to see in the playoffs.
Yeah. He's also, Luka's just like having fun. The headband is silly and he's kind of embracing it. Saw some clip of him last night, like running awkwardly with his legs like scissors to the locker room, just yelling, "I'm fast, I'm fast." And that time he offered a towel to the crying fan. Like the last time I saw this man live was in Manila and he was miserable. And it was not an enjoyable experience to be in the gym while he was dominating all of the action and crying to the refs the whole time. Like it's a nicer experience to watch this super talented guy when he's got a smile on his face and he's cracking jokes. And our super producer John Gennaro is messaging me that fatherhood has made him happy. Like maybe that's true. You know, Devin saying that on the broadcast, you know, maybe that is what has really brought this guy some holiday cheer for a full 2023-2024 campaign. I don't know. On the other side, Phoenix, oof, man.
Yikes.
Not so happy over there. And like I know there was on the ESPN broadcast, you know, report that Kevin Durant, you know, people are starting to feel his frustration there. Like, no shit, man. They suck. They are under 500. I haven't looked at the standings today. They're out of the play-in picture for sure. The TM play-in push that they have to go on, it's going to be brutal if Bradley Beal is playing two games all year, which, look, yeah, the Suns, yeah, they are 11th. They are out of the play-in right now, 14-15, half game behind the Golden State Warriors. And there's not much wiggle room to get better here. Like that was always what it was about. And that was always the stakes at play. So this is the peril. This is what happened. Exactly. This is what happened in Brooklyn. When you put these guys together, when you put three max players together, sure, it sounds like the upside is there, but the downside is always so, so, so bad. And it can get there really, really fast, especially when you've mortgaged all your tools to get you out of this. There are teams like the Memphis Grizzlies who definitely, I forget exactly the particulars, but made that deal of trading seconds for pick swaps, who are definitely betting on the future of Phoenix being poor. The Washington Wizards, you can clown that return for Bradley Beal, but they got several valuable potential pick swaps with Phoenix that, you know, that deal with KG and Paul Pierce in Brooklyn years ago ended up getting one of Tatum or Brown, I forget, I'm sorry, for the Boston Celtics because the Nets were so bad, the pick swapped. So dire circumstances. I don't know exactly what they can do to really move this thing forward. They have Nasir Little's $8 million salary, which will be definitely talked about and thrown around in the rumor mill. But aside from that, I don't know exactly how many players are coming in at $8 million salary and demonstrably changing your upswing here, because you know, Grayson Allen is super valuable to this team. Talk about movement shooting, ding, ding, ding. And he scored 32 last night. He was their leading scorer. He's done that multiple times this season where he gets hot from deep and it just kind of changes the geometry of that offense. So, man, I feel bad for Phoenix. Let's wrap this after your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, did you expect Shemezi Metu to get 23 points and Durant to only shoot 11 times throughout the game? You know, him and Devin Booker was definitely defended very well, struggled. I mean, they combined for 10 for 22 from the field, man. So, like, I feel like at this point, this issue is bigger than Bradley Beal coming back and saving the day. I think we'd all be we'd all be very surprised if it was Bradley Beal that was going to change the trajectory of this team. So there's just way too many holes now. Yusuf Nurkic didn't play in this game. I think that that certainly mattered for their rim protection. But I don't know that I expect that Kevin Durant's going to demand a trade or anything like that. I think he's probably going to see this through. They just got to play better at this point. There was a moment that I remember, I think maybe, I'm trying to remember who stole the ball. Someone ripped Durant, and then Devin Booker was running back, didn't try to contest it. I think it was Tim Hardaway Jr. actually dunked it. And the mic caught him saying something like, yo, you're not going to get back? Like, yo, yeah. You're not going to come back for this? And
you turn the ball over and you're not going to run back?
Right. It's like, those are the types of things that you got to fix that internally. Like, this is effort. This is, this is deeper than just playing better. So I feel like they gotta go back to the drawing board. Maybe it's Frank Vogel needs to figure out a way to motivate them again. But I mean, I think these L's racking up, it should be enough motivation for them to try to course correct. And Durant's just got to be more effective, man. What he said after the post game was like, oh, well, you know, Grayson Allen was feeling it and Metu had his best game. So I was just kind of like playing with the flow of the game. It's like, bro, you're Kevin Durant. You need to shoot more than 11 times, man. Don't be passive. So we'll see how this goes, man. But I think in terms of all the teams we talked about between the Lakers and the Suns, who are you pressing the panic meter more for? Because sounds
I'd say Phoenix, just because they do have less to play with. The Lakers don't have a ton to play with either, but they've kind of made this bed and now they have to lie in it and fluff the pillows and figure out if the one that they've been using underneath can like be more comfortable for a couple of nights, and then change that pillow out after another night of insomnia, and you know, keep pulling on that metaphor. They don't have a lot to play with. That being said, like, they are motivated from an ownership standpoint and a front office standpoint to push every last chip in. So they will be absolutely tweaking something. Like, I will be shocked if this is a team that we wake up on February 9th and they haven't done anything. So that's at least something to hang your hat on and hope for, I guess.
So one random question. Do you know who leads the league in charges drawn?
Is it Grayson Allen?
Tim Hardaway Jr.
Tim Hardaway Jr. He's having a hell of a year, man.
Isn't he?
Speaking of guys who were on, speaking of shooters who signed a contract that everyone immediately just crapped on, and he's been in trade talk forever. Man, sixth man of the year candidate.
Dude, he's doing it all. And I was very surprised to see that, just because typically you think of him as an offensively focused player, but he was actually top 10 in charges drawn last year too. So I think the commitment from him on both sides of the ball, and also, you know, the Mavs are playing with a lot of injuries right now between Dante Exum getting minutes and playing well. Like, this team is just really, as you said, I think there's a fun element here that they're all playing in. They're all buying in. They're all playing well. It's just great to see.
Great to see. Great to see you, Dan Titus. Any final fantasy thoughts before we get you out of here? I mean, how'd my Santi Aldama last pick of the mock draft end up working out?
It looked great initially, especially with Steven Adams being ruled out for the season shortly thereafter. But that the course ended pretty quickly once Xavier Tillman started getting into the fold and all that. But I thought it was really cool to see that, because I'm like, what does Jake know that we all don't know? So that's why you got to draft with insiders.
I know that Memphis really likes him and they value his versatility. He could play the four or the five. I think they can even think he can play some like Larry Markkanen supersize three. And I knew they were going to be without Ja. And if an injury were to arise, he could get some opportunity, but I did not know that. I didn't know Adams would be out for the year. Yeah. But now that Memphis is back, everything's happy. Ja's there, 3-0.
The savior. But I think it's great for the league. It's great for Memphis. Their floor is obviously raised. They got quite the hole to dig themselves out of, but it's at least going to be fun to watch Memphis actually play some competent ball for the now the regular season is actually starting now that Christmas is over. Now it's really about to take their stride. But I'd say the one player that I would say look out for, hold on to, is Coby White. And for much of the reasons that we talked about before with Zach LaVine and potentially getting traded and the team playing better, that being the Chicago Bulls without LaVine on the floor, they gave him an extension in the offseason, he's going to be their future shooting guard of this team. Like, I don't know what they're going to do with, you know, DeMar DeRozan and Nikola Vucevic, whatever. But I think one mainstay that they're going to have in their, as a core piece now is Coby White. And the way he's been playing right now, he's been a top 50 player in fantasy. I don't see that going down or away now that, you know, Zach LaVine is away from the team and likely going to be traded at some point in this off in this season. So, yeah, buy all the shares of Coby White if you can.
Some Coby White love, some Derek White love, and some Dan love. Dan, thank you, man. Appreciate you. That's all we've got for today. No doubt. Thanks to John Gennara for doing all the things he does to make this show look and sound great. Follow us on various social media platforms that are out there. I am at Jake L. Fisher. That is at Dan Titus. Subscribe to Ball Don't Lie on YouTube and whatever podcast platform you are currently listening on, and leave us a 5-star review. That would be such a lovely Christmas present for me in my Santa hat. Not an elf hat, Santa hat. We thank you for listening. We appreciate it. We came back again next week for another episode of No Cap Room.